You are listening to an ADIS Journal podcast.
Hello, and welcome to today's podcast. Knowledge is power. HER2-mutant non-small cell lung cancer. I'm Vivek Subbiah, medical oncologist and chief of early phase drug development from the Sarah Cannon Research Institute, Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome, everyone. Today, we have Dr. Martin Dratrick and Dr. Zunin Lee. Dr. Dratrick and Dr. Lee, can you please introduce yourselves?
This is Xunin Lee. I'm an associate professor at MD Anderson in the Department of Thoracic Medical Oncology. I'm also the deputy section chief. I'm really glad to participate in today's episode of Knowledge is Power.
Hello, I'm Dr. Martin Dietrich. I'm a medical oncologist at the U.S. Oncology Network with the Cancer Care Centers of Brevard in Orlando, Florida.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure and privilege to have you both. Today, we are going to have a HER2-mutant non-small cell lung cancer overview, Knowledge is Power. In the first episode of our podcast series, we introduced the emerging landscape of HER2-mutant non-small cell lung cancer, highlighting its place within the broader context of non-small cell lung cancer. We explained what makes HER2-mutant non-small cell lung cancer unique, from its epidemiology and biology to molecular mechanisms driving cancer growth. We discussed the evolution of precision medicine in non-small cell lung cancer, the role of HER2 as a therapeutic target, and how advances in molecular profiling have enabled the development of targeted therapies. The episode also covers the latest treatment strategies, including antibody drug conjugates and tyrosine kinase inhibitors, and we also review the challenges and opportunities that define this aggressive cancer subtype. This podcast aims to enhance understanding of HER2-mutant non-small cell lung cancer and the evolving therapeutic landscape that is reshaping management strategies for this aggressive and deadly disease. All right. So, you know, after this brief introduction, I'd like to open up, the floor for discussing about, you know, what is non-small cell lung cancer? Again, Dr. Lee, can you give us a brief overview of lung cancer, the cancer-related deaths, and why HER2? Floor is all yours.
Thank you, Dr. Subbiah. So lung cancer is the most common cause of death related to cancer worldwide and also in the U.S. Really is beyond prostate, beyond breast, and beyond the colorectal and the GI mortalities now. Is the leading cause of killer for all the cancer patients. Non-small cell lung cancer is the most common type of lung cancer. Over 85% of lung cancer belong to the non-small cell lung cancer. In the US, it's estimated around 200,000 new cases diagnosed per year. And then globally is over a million cases diagnosed per year. We have to say that non-small cell lung cancer in the treatment landscape has made a lot of progress in the last decade or so, especially in two areas. One is we start to understand what are the oncogene drivers and start to have precision oncology targets that we can actually target those drivers, therefore render patient a good response. So that's on the targeted front. We also have introduced immunotherapy checkpoint blockade. That area also transformed our management landscape, making sometimes even the lung cancer become a chronic disease. Focusing on today, we will be talking about HER2, which is an oncogene driver, so belong to the first group that we're talking about, really moving precision oncology forward. HER2 is a normal gene in our body, belongs to the ERBB family, but in 2004, about 20 years ago, there are publications identifying if the gene goes wrong, for example, having mutation or insertion or amplification, That genetic event can lead to oncogenesis, making the cell grow like nonstop. Therefore, HER2 signaling aberration becomes an oncogenic pathway that is worth for us to think about targeting. In 2025, as we're here today, we start to have targeted therapies for this group of lung cancer.
Wow, thank you so much for that overview of non-small cell lung cancer. Again, I would say in the last decade, we've had, you know, over 10 different oncogene drivers being targeted in lung cancer. And lung cancer has clearly become the poster child for precision oncology. Again, Martin, so again, focusing on the topic of the day, HER2, can you talk to us about HER2 alterations, how they drive cancer growth?
Yeah, so there is a number of features, and I think that you've already touched a little bit on this. HER2 is a very complex member of the HER2 or ERBB family. This is obviously first introduced, and I think this was our first segue into precision oncology via the epidermal growth factor receptor, our first actionable gene and a much more common mutation. And these receptors really have key roles in regulating cell growth, survival, and differentiation by activating a whole number of downstream signaling pathways that are important here. I think what we have to understand is that when HER2 is activated, we really achieve a state of ligand independence. So some of the autoregulatory mechanisms are going away. We see downstream activation of signaling pathways. HER2 overexpression, probably not as important in non-small cell lung cancer, was first identified. It drives cancer growth in many disease spaces, first in breast cancer, but we see it in many others as well. We see an increase in dimerization, and we see here both homo and heterodimerization within the ERBB family, an activation of downstream autophosphorylation leading to a continuous signaling of the pathway that then leads to uncontrolled oncogenic growth. There are three main principles of HER2 activating mechanisms, and I think the mutations are the most relevant we're seeing in non-small cell lung cancer. And in this case, the HER2 mutations are different from the mutations we're seeing in EGFR. We have a distribution that is very rare in EGFR, but we see in HER2 very frequent HER2 to exon 20 insertion mutations. We can see gene amplifications or epigenetic events that lead to protein overexpression. And each of them are very biologically distinct and need different different treatment approaches for cancer. They may or may not overlap in the way they execute their signaling, but it's important to really get the type of HER2 activation right to match it to the appropriate therapy. The overexpression, and I think this is a question of how we define it. We currently have an HER2 overexpression label for 3+ by immunohistochemistry, can vary greatly between the different subtypes. We see an incidence here somewhere between 7 and 23%. The amplifications may have some overlap between them. So we see a broader spread here as well, between 2 and 22% of non-small cell lung cancers. And for the HER2 mutations that we see here, and mainly again, the HER2 exon 20 insertion mutations, we also see extracellular domain mutations as well as transmembrane domain mutations are present in around 2 to 4% of non-small cell lung cancers. And here, obviously, enriched in the adenocarcinoma subset.
Wow. What? How much we have learned about HER2 in the last two decades. Again, for the broad listeners listening to this, in essence, right, there are three ways in which HER2 can be activated in non-small cell lung cancer, not just in non-small cell lung cancer, in many cancers. One is the gene mutation. Number two is the gene amplification. And number three is protein overexpression. The gene mutation and gene amplification are detected by what we call as a comprehensive next generation sequencing, whereas the protein overexpression is detected in the real world and for clinical trials for this specific test called immunohistochemistry. And again, as Martin clearly outlined, it is, you know, for lung cancer and many other cancers, the immunohistochemistry, it has to be scored IHC 3+. So again, a lot we learned in the last two decades about HER2. So talking about HER2, honing in on Dr. Ina Zunin, tapping to her knowledge and insight. So how do you think HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer differ from other types of lung cancer?
Thank you, Vivek. So HER2, just like Martin was explaining earlier, HER2 is a family member of ERBB family, is basically ERBB2. The more familiar target ERBB1 is EGFR. We already know EGFR mutation occurs in non-small cell lung cancer in around, depending on the region, anywhere between 15 to 50% of lung adenocarcinomas. So HER2 mutation actually have a lot of similarity compared to EGFR. From the patient characteristics, we've seen HER2 mutation occur more common in adenocarcinoma, occur more common in female patients who never smoke cigarettes, and occur in patients who are a little younger than the US population of initial diagnosis of non-small cell lung cancer. The initial diagnosis age sometime is between 55 to 60. So I have to say that this is a very devastating disease. As you can tell, it's a person who never smokes cigarettes thinking their risk is very minimal. However, this disease can just all of a sudden happen. Related to that, HER2 mutation non-small cell lung cancer also have a usually a aggressive disease course. At the time of initial diagnosis, a significant portion of patients, anywhere between 15 to 25%, already have brain metastasis. Therefore, I think trying to make sure that we understand each lung cancer at the initial diagnosis is quite important to identify HER2 mutation as a driver. Also, looping back to Martin's earlier discussion and, of course, your summary, the other two types of HER2 alteration, overexpression, and amplification have a different behavior, meaning that oftentimes that happens with HER2 mutation, but sometimes they don't. So that we need to distinct those two different types and then make sure we offer the right treatment based on the right genetic alteration.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So again, explain to us why precision medicine, right? Why precision medicine in lung cancer? And why HER2?
So I think what you are truly alluding to is HER2 now becomes a emerge as a new target. We know that it drives tumor growth. We actually now finally have options to treat the patients, right? So if it's an alteration, we don't have any good precision oncology method to help the patients. It's not as important as truly identify the patients and offer the right treatment matching the oncogene. So we finally enter an era that we have different treatment options. So the first possibility is to offer patient an antibody drug conjugates called trastuzumab deruxtecan, which is a targeted chemo, basically targeting HER2. That has been FDA approved for HER2 mutation, activating mutation non-small cell lung cancer patient after initial treatment. So using this precision oncology approach, we have seen really good response in around 50 to 55% for the trastuzumab deruxtecan for this patient population.
Thank you so much. So again, antibody drug conjugates, Zunin, are, again, we live in an era of antibody drug conjugates and small molecule inhibitors here. They are essentially a Trojan horse, right? They combine a monoclonal antibody with chemotherapy and deliver these potent chemotherapy payloads directly to the cancer cells, like a drone. So Dr. Martin, so again, can you contrast antibody drug conjugate and tyrosine kinase inhibitors? And where do we use them in HER2 mutated non-small cell lung cancer?
Oh, absolutely. I think there is a sort of a difference in mechanism. The antibody drug conjugates are more specific in their delivery compared to standard chemotherapy. And in addition to that, we are also using topoisomerase inhibitor payload. That is a mechanism that we haven't traditionally used in non-small cell lung cancer, but it's a chemotherapy that is probably targeting a more chemotherapy sensitive subset identified by the HER2 mutations. That's why we see these good response rates. A tyrosine kinase inhibitor contrasts to that by really specifically targeting the mutational underpinning of cancer. We are blocking ATP binding competitively through highly specific small molecules that are competing with ATP in the ATP binding pocket, and thereby deactivating the main switch of cancer. So it's a very different concept, and we're targeting extracellular versus intracellular here with the ADC and the TKI respectively, and thereby exploiting the main biological hallmark of this cancer subtype in its precision. Obviously, the concern is with all targeted therapies that evolutionary mechanisms apply, and resistance occurs through a variety of mechanisms that we yet have to understand better. But I think those are two options to exploit the same target in a non-small cell lung cancer when properly identified.
Well, thank you so much for explaining to our listeners. So again, to our listeners, again, this is ultimate precision medicine. So here, patients are less likely to be exposed to ineffective treatments, saving time, resources, and unnecessary side effects from chemotherapy. So it's good to always have more options here. So we have a monoclonal antibody with chemotherapy, that is an ADC. In contrast, we also have now this tyrosine kinase inhibitor directly inhibiting the intracellular domain of this mutant HER2. So again, tyrosine kinases appear to be most effective and tolerable group of agents directed at HER2-mutated non-small cell lung cancer. Again, to our listeners, we had an amazing discussion here with Dr. Martin Dietrich and Dr. Zunit Lee. So what we learned from here, HER2-mutant non-small cell lung cancer represents a clear, distinct, aggressive, and challenging subset of non-small cell lung cancer that requires specialized targeted treatment. We are still learning a lot about the biology of lung cancer, biology of non-small cell lung cancer, biology of HER2 mutant lung cancer. So the growing understanding of HER2 mutations in lung cancer is opening doors for targeted treatments and clinical trials. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast.
You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Journal Podcasts with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements and copyright information, please visit the article page on the journal website. The link to the article page can be found in the podcast description.